1000 Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the Washington line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 27th of January, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're bringing you news, views, stuff you can use.
I had to put my headphones on so you weren't so loud.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Today's Sunday.
Today is Sunday.
I heard a perfect good joke for Sunday.
Uh-oh.
Teachers,
get your hand on that dump button, Jessica.
Teacher's having class and says, ask the kids in front of all the little first graders, all right, who wants to take a guess on where God sleeps? Little Mary raises her hand. Ooh. Just, yes, Mary. Well, in heaven. Little Johnny raises his hand. Ooh. No, I know. Where does he sleep?
This is not going to be a little Johnny joke, is it?
Yep.
Uh-oh.
And she says, well, where does little Johnny sleep? Little Johnny goes, in the bathroom. In the bathroom. Johnny, why do you think he sleeps in the bathroom? He goes, well, every day my dad gets up, starts to head to the bathroom, and goes, God, you in there again?
Okay. All righty. Here we go. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips. We'll just start over.
Take two.
I thought it was cute.
That's cute.
All right.
It wasn't dirty.
That's what happens when you're alone in a car with yourself for 7.5 hours.
Bill Cosby has one like that, too.
I don't want to hear anymore.
It was a good Sunday joke.
He's clean family fun, right?
That's right, Bill Cosby, yeah. All right.
Why is there air?
Right. We have a 700 megahertz auction update. I didn't catch Friday's update yet. I'll get that to you. You know that they're re-auctioning off the 700 megahertz band, and the high bids total $3.2 billion in the auction of the wireless spectrum. The U.S. Federal Communication Commission. Auction of wireless spectrum licenses in the 700 megahertz band after three rounds and a day and a half of bidding. That figure is far short of the $10 billion Congress and the FCC expect to raise in the auction, which opened Thursday, but bidding would continue for a week. In most cases, the high bids don't yet meet the FCC's reserve minimum winning bids.
Yeah, you had to put up $4 billion just to even get a chance to bid.
Yeah, right. The 700 megahertz auctions represent the last large chunk of spectrum available for the FCC to auction in the foreseeable future. The spectrum, now used to carry over-the-air television signals, can be used to carry long-range wireless broadband traffic. Consumer groups have said the spectrum represents the last best hope for a nationwide wireless broadband network that competes with cable and telecom broadband services. Sale is 62 megahertz of spectrum in the 700 megahertz band. In late 2005, after decades of debate, Congress passed a law requiring U.S. TV stations to move to all digital broadcasts and abandon analog spectrum between channels 52 and 69. The deadline for TV stations to end broadcast in the 700 megahertz band is February 2009. One more year to get rid of those rabbit ears. One more year before nobody will even know what rabbit ears means.
Well, the rabbit ears still work. You just need a digital tuner.
Right. After three rounds, 906 of the 1,099 available spectrum licenses had bids, with four more of the licenses receiving bids at the end of round two late on Thursday. High bids had totaled just under $2.8 billion after round two, and just over $2.4 billion after round one on Thursday morning. Top bid after the third round was $1.49 billion for eight of the 12 regional licenses in the C block. This gets a little more probably characteristic here. But the thing is, they are beginning to auction off those licenses. What we hope is that at some point, somebody will buy it and create a nationwide wireless broadband network. That's our hope.
And that's sort of one of in their bot for the bid, either a Google phone, their Android operating system, or free nationwide wireless phone or free nationwide wireless internet. You know, either way would
or
be
both.
Really cool, or both. Yeah.
If I want the folks at Google listening to pay attention, I want the Google phone. I want to be a beta tester. I am ready.
So every 30 seconds into your phone call, an ad pops up?
I don't even care. I don't care. It'd be fun. All right, our first caller is Don from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
Good.
My sir, question, who came in?
I have Windows 98 SD. I've been on PC World and tried to get Zone Alarm and Sidegate Nose, but they only go to 2,000 for the free version.
You might want to check on PC World. Do a search for Commando.
I did. Same thing.
Commando only goes to 2,000?
Yeah. But I could.
Well, you may have to find an older version of them, because it's unlikely that any new program would support an OS that old.
But how would I do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, but then if you get an older
yeah, right, right.
version,
yeah, the older
then
versions aren't updated anymore, and they're yeah, not as
be
secure. Yeah.
There's a firewall called Jetico, but I don't know that that's free. I think it is. Jetico Personal Firewall, version 2.
How do you spell it?
JETICO.com.
Okay.
And it's the JP Firewall. Jetico.com, JETICO.com/JPF2.htm. I guess that's Jetico Personal Firewall 2.
JP.
F as in firewall.
Right.
2, the number 2.
Right.
Dot HTM, no L.
HTM. Give you an update on your super anti-spyware.
Yeah.
I put it on the machine. It works great.
There you go.
Good.
Use that with iBot, and that's been keeping me alive.
There you go.
You guys know anything about a free adware?
Yeah, there is.
Free?
Yeah.
Give me it.
It's right there on our Tango page.
Adware is free. They have a free version and they have a paid version.
That goes to Windows 98.
Oh, Windows 98.
I think that still might work.
Well, it's because they just went to the new 2007 version. It may not work with 98.
Yeah.
And they're going to stop releasing the old updates for
you're
going to
hear more
version.
And more there is no version anymore.
Oh, yeah, right. Because, I mean, you know, they can only support it so long. It is 98 and, this is 2008.
Have you considered Linux?
Yeah.
Machine is still running great. Just trying to keep it going until I have to absolutely say goodbye.
Yep. I'm afraid you're getting closer.
Your Jetico firewall version 2 does not support 98, but version 1 does.
Version 1, you got
to
get
and
on.
And again, if you go to an older version, you're not going to have the updates.
At this point, if you really want a firewall for 98, you're looking at a router.
Yeah, that would be the best. I mean, just go out and spend the $65 or so for a Linksys router that has a built-in firewall. And it doesn't matter what version, you could be running Windows 95. It's still going to protect you.
You just buy the router and it's a simple install, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, routers are simple. You plug your cable modem or your DSL into
the WAN.
To the WAN side.
I'm on dial-up.
Then no.
Then you got to get a dial-up router is much more
expensive. Yeah. You know really, you're.
I wouldn't bother with it. A dial-up?
Well, no. Sorry. The BBC did that. Computer out of a box, plugged it into dial-up. Within 8 seconds, it was attacked. Was 5 minutes, it was infested. And within 10 minutes, it was a zombie infesting other computers on dial-up.
Yep. Yeah, it really doesn't matter anymore what you're on. But you really. Try to see if you can get the Jetico version 1, but that's the best we can do for you at this point. I'm sorry.
Well, thanks a lot.
Ubuntu.com.
Yeah, or Ubuntu.com and download that. All right. I understand. I understand you want to keep it running. It's just...
Sometimes you that.
It's going to get harder. All right. Our next caller is Janet from Irondequoit. Welcome, Janet. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have a similar situation. I also have Windows 98. And someone sent me an email with a link, and I think that when I clicked on the link, I created a problem. Because now, after my computer is on for maybe 20 minutes or so, I get this rectangle box that says, error, could not find the file, /OCX. And then I get all these E's at the bottom of the screen. The only way to get rid of it is to a Control-Alt-Delete, and then I have in the Control-Alt-Delete box that comes up. It reads error all the way down. And I restart the computer, but then it happens again the next time I turn it on.
Right.
I don't know how to get rid of the file or find the file /OCX. I don't even know what that is.
Are you also on dial-up?
No, I'm not. I'm on Roadrunner, whatever it's called.
All right. Well, then you've got a little bit better of a chance.
Yeah.
You need to dance the security tango, and I don't know how much of the tango works for 98 anymore. I mean, the problem is you're infested with something.
Yep.
But we again run across the problem of all the new versions of all the software have dropped 98 support. And there's simply nothing we can do about that. That's their choice. Microsoft stopped supporting 98 forever ago, and companies are no longer interested in putting in the manpower and the hours to support an operating system that theoretically nobody runs anymore.
Okay, I do pay for a virus protection. I think it's called StopSign or something like that. Would they be able to help me?
They might. If you're paying for them, give them a call. That's the best I can tell you.
And
I am.
If it's a virus, which it sounds like it is not a virus,
no,
it's probably
like
spyware.
Spyware.
Yeah.
Right. But I would give them a call anyway. It certainly can't hurt.
That brings up the earlier point. Don't click on links in email.
Yeah.
It's even if you know the sender, they could be infected by someone.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, this was sent from someone that works at Xerox. So I hope it's not. I hope
it doesn't make any difference. Yeah. They can work at Xerox, but if it's coming from their home account, who knows?
Well, here's one thing you can do, and this is also for Don who in Buffalo, who I know is still listening. Over in the chat area and on IRC, Gizmo Man says, tell them to go to oldversion.com with older versions of software.
But again, you can get older versions of the software, but then the updates aren't going to be there.
Right, right. But at least for both of these folks, for Janet and for Don, they could at least get started. They get something as opposed to nothing. But Don's case, I don't know that it would be all that useful because we are talking about
They're both dealing with borrowed time.
Right. We are talking about a firewall, which is a whole different beast. But certainly, I suspect that at least for Janet, assuming this is not a new virus, she should be able to
get a new spyware. One of the things people don't want to hear is that 10-year-old operating system is really, really ancient. Yeah. It's like 7 dog years to a human year. It's like 50 computer years to a human year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, 2 or 3 years is old, and 6 months is out of date in most cases.
Yeah. 10 years is really pushing it for an operating system. We're going to take a break.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you. I hate to say that. I know people want to just keep their machines forever. You can keep the machine, you just got to update the operating system.
And don't connect to the internet.
Right. And Chris is right. If you run Ubuntu on those things, if you run a version of Linux, you get everything up to date always, and it'll run on older hardware. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, whose last name has never been Walker and possibly never will be. It was in my head, and I almost did it again. I don't even know a Jessica Walker. I don't even think there's a fictional character named Jessica Walker. But some why I have that in my head. It's Jessica Sawyer. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe with the lamest host in the known universe. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, I got distracted by something shiny. I don't know what just happened here a minute ago. Actually, I was listening to Dave. He was trying to get something done, and I was listening to him and not paying enough attention to the show. Office for Mac 2008 incorrectly assigns ownership of some files, Microsoft has confirmed, creating a potential security problem for businesses installing the new application suite. Joel Bruner, a Chicago-based Mac consultant, was the first to notice the ownership snafu. Microsoft moved to Apple's package manager, .pkg installer files, which is good news for the enterprise, but unfortunately, they've created all the packages to install most all of the files with the ownership set to 502. In a shop where employees run with limited privileges, a practice very common in an enterprise, and IT is the only user with full administrative rights, Office 2008's ownership assignment means that a user who wasn't supposed to have complete control over those files actually does. In other words, whomever is assigned user ID 502 has full read-write access to Office files. Now, the big deal there is the first user is, of course, the admin. That person's ID is 501. The next user gets 502. So user 502 has admin rights over Office 2008. And could therefore accidentally, or on purpose, if they're malicious sons of guns, actually delete the application. Or mess around with any of the files created by it, like, somebody else's. So the screw-up could present a corporate security problem, at least internally, said Bruner, if the Mac's second Standard user, user 502, decides to make changes to the folders and files by, say, deleting some or moving others. Microsoft developer left a comment at Bruner's Law confirming that the company knows about the problem. The MacBU, Mac Business Unit, well, they use U instead of S, is aware of this issue, said Eric Schweibert, a software design lead in the group. You know what, he's paying attention. Okay. Okay. Microsoft, however, did not immediately respond to queries about how it intends to correct the problem and what users can do in the meantime. Other commenters at Bruner's blog hesitated to blame only Microsoft, however. The truth is that this is a long-standing flaw in Apple's installer, argued someone identified as not required. Maybe Microsoft should have known better, but maybe Apple should also have improved their installer years ago. Apple clearly hasn't cared enough about small developers to make a fix, so hopefully Microsoft has a high enough profile that something finally gets done. In a follow-up post also on Monday, Bruner added that all Office for Mac 2008 files owned by user 502 are also erroneously set as executable. Like the readme.txt file is executable.
Wow.
Yeah. So if somebody did maliciously stick a program in place of readme.txt, you wouldn't know it, and if you clicked on it, you'd run it. And owned. Absolutely. This is a huge security hole, and Microsoft
has issued a terminal command to change the ownership back to what it should be.
Well, just
be.
What I was going to say. There's, yeah. You can do it through the terminal and change the ownership, but most Mac people don't know how.
Right.
So you're going to post the link.
Yep.
I mean, on Linux, that's the first thing you learn. You know, changing ownership is easy enough. But Mac people generally, if you can't click on it, they can't do it. So having a nice link to a place, that'll be very good.
There is a really good GUI version of that change mod called that change mod. That gives you a nice GUI for changing permissions, so you don't have to type them.
Oh, good. Thank heaven. All right. We hate to have to have Mac people actually use their keyboards for anything other than moving their characters around in Second Life. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to update my Windows XP.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a website has encountered an error and cannot display the page you want trying to view. And it gives me a number error, and I Google that error, and it says it's a registry fix or something.
What's the error?
The error is 0x800703EE.
What browser are you using?
Internet Explorer?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the one you have to use for Windows and Office updates. You can't use Firefox or Chrome or any other browser.
No, I'm just using that. I just purchased Registry First Aid and ran that. And when it's almost finished doing its whatever it's doing, the computer restarts.
Generally, well, Oh, this is arrow. All right, hold on. That's odd. I know that there are. That normally indicates that one or more of the files have been altered, lost, or corrupted, so they can't be opened and cannot be read, even if they could be opened.
If you go to c:\windows/windowsupdate.txt, it may tell you which file it is having trouble with.
Right. First, there are a couple of things that could be causing this. One is it could be your antivirus software is somehow preventing this from happening. I hesitate telling people to turn off antivirus, but that's something to keep in your head anyway. Same thing with your firewall.
Mm-hmm.
I would do a scan of your hard drive and see if there are any errors on the hard drive.
I did a scan disk and it finished with, and that didn't correct anything.
But did it find any errors?
No.
Okay, there's also the Windows update.log file, which is in your Windows folder. You can open that with Notepad, and the most recent entries are the last, you know, say 15 or 20 lines should be the lowest, should be the last entries. They're down at the bottom.
Yeah, it's kind of rough. It means something is wrong somewhere. And then trying to figure out,
but to get rid of it, the only way to really get rid of it is, you know, if you did this update, say, on Friday, is pick a rollback date of, say, Thursday, and go back to that and try, you know, doing the download again.
Yeah, it's been about a month. When it first occurred, I thought it was something with their website was down, so I just didn't bother.
Right.
And then I say, wait a minute, it's been a couple weeks, and I'm still getting the same errors. It can't be their website.
No. But I would try those things.
Something got in the way of the updating.
Okie dokie. Well, how you doing, Dave? This is Bob.
Oh, hey, Bobby. Long time no talk to.
Yeah, I know.
Give me a call next week.
Okie dokie.
All right.
Well, thanks, guys.
Yep.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Soundbites, bringing friends together since 1989. What?
There's a lot of posts on a lot of different websites, including Microsoft's public news server, that it seems to be a fairly common problem when an update doesn't work. And
yeah.
Most of their fixes are uninstall that update.
But and try again.
But how do you know which one?
Right, right, right.
Yeah, theoretically, the last one in your update list?
That's what going into that log is for.
Yep.
That'll tell you what the last you were. Start at the bottom and work your way up, I guess. I don't know what else to say. This is one of the real problems with Windows in general, is the dearth of good error messages. You know, and it's just, it's terrible. All right, our next caller is Sue from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Sue. What's your question?
Hi. I'm very frustrated with my Yahoo.com email. I've had it for about a year and a half. And one morning, after being busy all week with it, I opened it up and it said, "This account has been deactivated due to non-use, or you requested." Well, I didn't, and I'd been very busy with it. So what it's showing at me is that it's a new page. My folders are gone, my contact list is gone, and I'm not receiving new mail that my friends have told me they're sending me. There is just zero in the box. So I'm wondering, it's important for me to know if I did something.
First thought would be someone hacked the account, but usually they want to keep it open, sending junk. They wouldn't cancel it.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
This was deactivated.
It just deactivated the...
Yeah, was this an email that you received saying it was deactivated?
It was a message that I got from Yahoo.com. It was just on the screen when I opened up. It said, when I put my password in and clicked, it said this account has been deactivated. Pardon?
Well, that's, yeah...
Yahoo's practice has been to deactivate accounts after 4 months of inactivity, but that's not the case here.
No, no, I've been very busy with it. And I've been receiving, or I've been having emails sent to me by friends.
That's why I'm wondering if you've been hacked with spyware or that, that's sending out this false...
It could have been an error at Yahoo where they thought the account was idle and... Maybe an account name that's really, really close to yours was idle, and they deactivated the wrong account.
But do you have a number that I can call Yahoo and say, give me back my email? Because now I'm not even receiving... Before,
well,
I
was probably gone anyway.
Daily. Now I haven't been receiving any messages that I know have been sent to me.
Right. I don't...
They do everything via email and search. I doubt they have any phone numbers.
Yeah, they have a help center,
uh-huh.
Something called Help Central.
Yes, and I have typed in my request for restoration, and I've not received any email back. I can open my mailbox, you know, and it just says you have zero unread messages in your mailbox. There is nothing in my sent. There's no folder.
And if you send a message now, does it go out?
I'm not sure. I haven't sent any because I'm not sure. I just haven't sent any. I've been very frustrated trying. It's been more my tendency to try to get my emails coming in. I've got some confirmations coming in that should have been there for some orders and things, and it's just zero, just not there. And I did send a request to this help center, and I haven't received anything back from them. So I'm very frustrated because it's just like Big Brother came in overnight and wiped me out.
And you've checked for spyware and viruses?
Yes, and nothing is showing up.
Yeah. Yahoo is simply not good with phone numbers. They don't give any.
Yeah, they don't want you calling them.
Yeah.
Well, is there, you know,
well,
I go
free
into
service.
Yahoo.com on the internet for contact for customer service, and I get so many different customer service, I don't even know where to start, even to send them an email. Do you have a suggestion for the best place to send an email to them to say, here I am, help me?
You go to smallbusiness.yahoo.com/contact-us, and they have a form to fill out where you pick what type of problems you're having.
Say that again. Small business.
Smallbusiness.yahoo.com/contact-us.
Okay. I'll try that.
Give that a try, and good luck. I hate to hear that.
Let us know, though. I'd be curious.
Well, you know, ironically, this is the second time I had Hotmail. I lost a Hotmail account 3 years ago.
Yeah, you might want to consider not using a free service.
Yeah, go with
you get what you pay
your
for.
Service, you know, whether you're Frontier, DSL, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
go with one of those. It's a little more reliable and a live person to talk to.
Okay.
These freebies, you're getting just what you're paying for.
Okay.
I found a phone number.
Fair enough.
Wait a minute, he's got a phone number.
Quickly.
800-318-0783.
And we'll post that up on the website. I'm afraid we have to take a break right now. Back in just a couple of minutes with the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that's Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Sound Bites. All right, just to make our friend Sue feel a little better, Charter Communications said it had erased thousands of email accounts by mistake. Now, Charter is an internet service provider. They're not, you know, those are the people you go to get your internet. Charter spokesman said an accident during routine maintenance deleted 14,000 accounts. Customers lost all of the information in the 14,000 deleted accounts, including emails, photographs, and bills. Lisa Flood said she couldn't believe her computer screen. I had about 8 folders over here, she said, and now all I have is just, I have nothing. Flood said she lost family photos and other information in her email account. The pictures, that's a bad deal. Like, my niece went to Chicago and was playing in the snow. It's gone, you know? She also had been saving emails from her son in college. And it's his first year, so he emails with important things to tell mom, Flood said. And I've been saving them all in a folder, and it's all gone. The company said there was no way to recover the lost information. We're straight out apologizing for this gaffe, Charter spokesman Craig Watson said. It's never happened to us before. We put in place an extra fail-safe system. You mean like backing it up before you delete it?
Yeah, back up.
So it will never happen again. But Flood said an apology isn't enough. I hadn't really started to think about some kind of compensation, but sorry just doesn't get it, she said. They say they're going to keep it from happening again. How do I have faith in that? Charter said it does not currently plan to compensate customers. Oh, that's not a good idea. Millions of people use web-based email accounts from providers such as Yahoo, Hotmail, and Google. With such accounts, the emails are not stored in the customer's computer, but on the website servers. Experts said people should always back up their email.
Really? I mean, it's kind of foolish.
Right.
If it's that important to you, you should be backing it up. Just to protect your own
body. I know people that use Google as their backup. Wow, because Google gives me 5 gigs of space. Well, yeah, but what happens if they lose it?
Google is 6 gigs now, but you're right. What if Google loses it? Now, Google, I had to trust anybody to not lose my email. It would be Google. But the reality is that there's no guarantee. I mean, our email at RIT, we provide email for all our people, and we give them lots and lots of disk space. I'm going to say how much because at that
but
we give them
limit.
Lots of space, and we back that up every night. We have a tape every night of everybody's mail. So if the system goes down, we've still got the mail.
CYA.
But I cannot imagine that places like Yahoo and this Charter communication doesn't do the same thing. I just find that mind-bogglingly stupid.
To my mind, they have just admitted that they're not doing backups by saying that there's no way to recover the mail.
That they're not particularly good at, what's the word I'm thinking of, professional services.
The concept.
Yeah.
But the thing that is I'll bet you if you read in the fine print, they've got their butt covered.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
I mean, hello, it's electronic. It's going to fail. It's not when it or if actually, it will fail, it's going to fail, and you know, you got to cover your butt.
That's going back to Google a second. They've published some statistics on hard drive failures. How many tens of thousands of hard drives is Google using?
Yep. And they know.
Yep.
If anybody knows, they know. All right, our next caller is Bob. Calling from Pennsylvania, high on a mountaintop in Pennsylvania. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, actually, I'm glad I'm not on a mountaintop, but even in the valley, it's bad enough this time of year. But thank you very much for a very helpful and useful show. And
thank
I would
you.
Like to help a couple of previous callers.
Oh, I love this part.
Old OSs.
Yeah.
I use Windows 95 and 98, and I have a year-old Dell with XP Home in it. But I back up routinely by using Norton Ghost on the two older ones. So that if there is any problem, if there's any infection, because I'm on a dial-up connection out in the middle of nowhere trying to update that stuff, even if I can get updates, is really hard. But Norton Ghost will make an image of the contents of the hard drive.
Yep.
And if anything goes wrong, you lose files, get infected, whatever, 5 minutes, you can restore it to perfect and ready to go again.
Yipper.
So yeah, that's, I really, really advise doing something
some
of
sort
that
of backup
sort.
Period. Yeah.
Well, it's actually because you've got the whole thing
right.
ready to go. You put well, the yeah, image we've, back we've talked in about, and it wipes everything on the drive and starts over.
We've talked about that in the past. You can do a fast backup or a fast restore, but usually not both.
Right.
To image your whole hard drive is going to take a while, but then it restores really quickly.
Right. Yeah.
Well, actually, it doesn't take that long on these older computers because
there's nothing, there's hardly anything on
there. Yeah, right, yeah, right.
Remember when 5 megs was a huge hard drive?
Yeah.
Well, the laptop has a 1 gig hard drive in it, so that doesn't take very long. And the Windows 98 computer is 8 gigs, so even so, that's still not terribly.
Now, what do you back up to?
CDs.
Excellent.
And I keep all the old ones. I don't throw anything away because you never know when something is going to sneak in, and you might have to go back to.
Right.
But that is the method that I trust most because, as I say, out here in the middle of nowhere on a dial-up, trying to keep these things up to date, if you can, is about impossible. But right. imaging, no problem.
Very nice, Bob. Thank you so much.
Yes, indeed.
Have a great time down there in Pennsylvania. He's farther south than we are, so we hate him. He's slightly warmer.
But south of the thruway, isn't that where all the snow hits?
Why don't they move the thruway into the lake? Because
yeah.
everything comes north of the thruway. Apparently, the thruway is a barrier to weather. So why don't we just move the thruway into the lake and we'll be done. We'll be paradise. We'll be nice. More north of Toronto, everybody wins. I don't know why they don't. I don't go. All right, we're going to take another. There's my little rant. We'll be back with Uncle Dave. And Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco. And it's in my head, Jessica. I have no idea why. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. It is 48 minutes after the hour. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I have no idea why you're not. Because we're here having fun. You're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that's Soundbites. And here we are on a snowy Sunday morning on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. All right, kiddies. Go grab your footy jammies. Put them on. Grab your mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. Because if we can wake him up, it's time for Story Hour with the newly returned Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave! Wake up!
Oh,
trip yesterday?
No, I've had a week to think about this one.
Jessica, hand on the button. That's all I'm saying.
You know what? Like I say, last week I was gone and had to do another side trip for 3D printing. It got me thinking, you know, as it's going on. Because they sit there and complain about what's wrong with America. Well, you know what? Most parents are jellyfishes! They have no backbone! And what am I talking about? I had a parent bring in a laptop. And said, oh, it's infested again. I had it in here just a little while ago, and it's broken again. Well, no, Sherlock. You
got your hand on that button. It's going to get worse. It's only going to get worse.
When you turn around and let your kids use your computer for something you want to use business for, you're going to run into issues. And what really porked me off is when we called and asked the kid the password. Told the parent, no. Hello? Who the heck is the parent? You got it. It's not their computer. If they pay for it, then fine, they can own it. But I'll be darned if I'm going to have some pimply-faced teenager telling me, no, he's not going to give me the password.
Now, don't upset people with acne.
Oh, I don't
We've gotten letters before.
Good, and this kid.
We had a dressing down from someone on the phone.
I saw the kid. He did. And you know what? I don't care. Because guess what? I got back at him. I took his password off, put one on for the parent. Now the kid's got to ask the parent to get on the computer. And he had porn on there. Didn't want mom to see it. Well, mom saw it. I got busted him. You know what? I don't care. Because the parent is supposed to be controlling the computer. Two things I have always said. One, get the computer out of the kid's room because... You know what? You should be seeing what they're doing anyways. Nothing should pop up on that screen that shouldn't be there anyway. And, oh, by the way, last I knew, you know, parents sit there and say, I don't know much about computers. They're all so new, high tech. I really am dumb around one. Well, if you sat down and learned, you know,
have
sat
your kid
there
teach
with
you.
Yeah, have them teach you. It's called quality time.
And you know, the thing that really has always bothered me is the parents who say, "Well, you know, it would be upset. I'm trying to be a friend to my child." You know what? Your kid's got a lot of friends. He's only got two parents.
That's where we're running into a big
mess. Be the freaking parent.
So I,
well, at some point, theoretically, two parents.
Well, this is where, like I say, I know the kid's porked off. You know what? I don't care because I took the responsibility, put his password off there, showed the parents. Which I think was probably amazing. You know?
Yeah.
Where did you get that? It's out there. Hello, if you take some time and learn it, you'll see. It's out there. It's a free. It's legal. Not child porn, which I do not tolerate it one bit.
Right.
But adult porn, it's out there, folks. And yeah, they can look at it. Little Johnny can find it. It doesn't take a big search.
And see, and that's what
pretty
Jessica-
much any random set of characters typed into the address bar of a browser will bring up.
But
a
the
porn
big
site.
Thing
and
is,
that's where Jessica Walker's coming from. That's where you're getting her name.
No.
Google Jessica Walker, you find some things.
Well, I don't even want to go there. But this kid, the parents were.
Did I say Walker? I meant Tandy, Jessica Tandy.
He's trying to.
She's done nude scenes too. What was that last?
He's trying to cover his butt. Why he calls
him
something else?
She's 143 years old.
Mr. Skin had her on the worst nude scene in movies or something like that.
But anyways, bottom line is folks, if you're gonna let the kids in there, you've got to take control. And a lot of this other stuff that he was getting into was causing the issues. I can't be sitting there controlling your computer if you're going to try to use it for work and let your kids play with it. You've got to make up your mind. If you're going to let little Johnny and Mary sit there and download their music or surf the web and wind up looking at porn, there's a lot of other advertisements and everything else. You might be very embarrassed if you're going to a meeting. Also, you can go to pull up a website and, porn is taking over your computer. Because I've seen it where you tap on a website and 25 porn sites will pop up. How would you like to be displaying that for your client?
Every time you close one, 20 more
show up. You've got to take some responsibility. Get a backbone, and if they don't like it, too bad. Tell them to buy their own computer. See how fast that flies. You've got to take ownership. And it's about time we do here in America. Because too often, they have full control. No, you do. You just got to own up to it. And it's been too long in coming that your parents don't.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of this, that they've got to literally get a damn backbone.
You know what would be a great service to provide, and not for free?
Beating on kids?
Beating on the kids, that would work.
Yeah. What would be
great would be putting in a proxy server and teaching the parents how to block websites. And how to cache everything so they can go back and
look
at it.
That's a whole nother business.
All right, I believe we are done.
I told you I was saving it up a week long.
You clearly were saving it up. All right, kiddies, we're going to give Uncle Dave his little medicine now. So wash out your mugs, change back out of your footy jammies, and we'll put Uncle Dave to sleep. And I mean that in the nicest way. For another week. Wow. We're not letting Uncle Dave be alone in a car with himself for 7 hours at a shot anymore, ever. So we're done with another of Uncle Dave. I think we're also done with the entire segment of sound bites, aren't we, Jessica? All right, that's apparently it. So we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of more minutes. We're going to actually go to the news, the weather, the sports, all the stuff you really listen to Wham for. And on the other side of that, we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the, I don't know which one of these I'm looking at now, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Me, Beaver, and all of you. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was worrying about online predators. 279 of you voted it, tying with number 217 in the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you.
How about a poll on whether parents have a backbone or not?
Yeah!
I like it! I'm submitting it.
All right, submit it. The poll was on online predators. The winner, 49% of you said, if it bleeds, we can kill it. 27% yet said yes, mostly for my kids. 14% said, nah, commando baby. And 30 of you said yes, mostly for myself. This week's poll came out of an interesting patent application. Apple has touched on a new way to help you find your way around its product. The company has registered technology in the U.S. that could see the iPod's click wheel or your MacBook Air's touchpad light up when you, as they put it, finger it. The patent application, which was filed recently with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, shows in block diagram form how the inclusion of a lighting mechanism would help guide users around a device by relating menu options to lighting changes. It's a little like someone switching on the hallway light off and on for every step you take up the stairs. Apple's patent lists several potential designs. For example, one design shows how the light could track the user's finger around a scroll wheel like a ball of fire. Another tracks the user's digits in block formation. The idea could be incorporated into laptops like the Air. The most intriguing design shows how the intensity of the light emitted would grow as the speed of the user's scrolling. If you're really in a hurry to find your favorite song, then you get a handy click wheel flashlight. While the patent application rambles on for many pages, they often do, the real question is, how much would the addition of a light to a click wheel or touchpad really improve the operation for users? Will there be different light color combinations and the wheel flash to the beat of your music, or will it affect the iPod and Air's existing operation negatively, such as shortening battery life? More importantly, should Apple be able to actually patent lighting something up when you touch it? Both Busby Berkeley, who had stairs that did that in the 30s, and the folks who make the Simon device were unavailable for comment. So our question this week is, should Apple be able to patent lighting something up by touching it? And the choices are, of course, hey, they're Apple. And no, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. That's right. Simply two choices this week. It's simple yes or no question. Most of you should be able to handle that. So far, we've got 93 votes. 87% of you think it's the stupidest thing they've ever heard of. And 13% of the Jobs sheep flock said, of course, hey, they're Apple. Now, when you're done with that, you know that you've got more to say than just a yes or a no. So in the little yellow box underneath, you'll see the link, Give Us Your Opinion. Click on that. It takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Well done. And you'll be able to enter an actual opinion. We have 11 so far. While you're there, check out what I do. I put out a newsletter. You can search the old newsletters. There's forums, some real interesting things going on in there. I send out my newsletter generally three times a week. I admit this week has been a little tough on the personal front. So I slipped. We'll see what happens if I can catch up.
Griffin Technology already makes an iPod case that blinks and lights up and flashes in time to the music.
They're about to be sued big
time. It's
the
disco.
Apple will be suing them because they will own the patent on touching something to light it up. The clapper people are sighing in relief, because theirs is a non-touch technology. So,
now, if Microsoft had filed this patent, what would we think?
The same thing I think now. It's the stupidest, dumbest, most ridiculous. People in the patent office ought to all be lined up and forced to listen to Dave for 24 straight hours. When they're done bleeding for the... Hi.
Nobody else has patented it yet.
You want to get me going again?
No.
Watch where you walk.
All right, back to the phone.
Well, who's that guy that tried to patent the wheel? A few years ago, someone tried to patent the wheel.
Tried to patent the alphabet, too.
Because there was no patent on it yet.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Our next caller is Vito from Chilai. Welcome, Vito. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks, Eric Holden.
Sure.
Thanks to you guys. We have an arsenal to keep our computers clean.
There you go.
Recently, we ran SpySweeper, and we came up with Wing, WINGKEY. Can you get some information about WingKey and where we might have picked it up from?
Well, you could have picked it up from anywhere. Unfortunately, that's it is a spyware program, and it could come from anywhere, unfortunately.
Oftentimes, it's sort of the less savory websites, but that may have been an accident. You know, the classic example was always WhiteHouse.com is not the White House. It used to be a White House with things in it you wouldn't want your mother to see. So
often using lookalikes for the various people currently in office.
Yep. A lot of the porn companies have taken out domain names that are misspellings of well-known names, so that when you misspell it, you go to them. So it could have been something accidental. It could have been from an email that someone else sent you, that they had been infected. It's spyware is just so insidious, it's very easy to pass
and
around.
And like you were pointing out, though, you know, you can get stuff from folks that you know, but if they're not doing their due diligence to keep their machines clean, guess what? You're just going to get infected also.
Let me ask this then. We review our email by using webmail so that we don't really bring the email in. Am I fooling myself about that?
Yes, because you are bringing the email in. When you open it on the web page, it executes all of the code in that email. What you should do is turn off any previewing, and that's the big thing. When you download the mail to your computer with something like Eudora or Outlook or Apple Mail on the Mac, turn off that preview pane. Then you can click and delete a message without actually looking at it. Just the act of looking at a message will execute any code in that message, especially on a web page.
Right.
Because most of the things are coming in with web code.
Right. And this all comes from making email more than a conveyor of information. By making it cutesy with fonts and backdrops and sounds and animations and all the other crap that they put in there. What you end up with is you're essentially every time you open your mail, you're looking at a web page and anything could be in there, including a virus. One of the things that most email programs let you do is turn all that off. You can view your email as plain text. Then, even if there is something bad in it, A, it won't activate automatically, and B, you would have to actually click on a link in order to activate it, and all you have to do then is train yourself to keep your hand off the stinking mouse while you're reading your email.
I don't know where there is a preview plane in webmail. We use Eudora, but I don't know where there's place to turn off the preview. We just basically...
I think it's under the view menu. I haven't used Eudora in a while. I loved it. I used it for years before they stopped making it.
Well, and if you're using webmail, it depends on which webmail service you're using and if that offers a way to turn off the preview pane.
Right, and you'll have to talk to them about that. But for those of you out there listening, if you can, if your program offers this possibility, turn off the preview pane. That will help.
And for everybody else, stop sending web pages as email.
Yeah.
Don't send cute fonts. Don't send cute colors.
Well, for a lot of people, that's the only reason they're in email.
Yeah.
And I understand that. It's just that that's what causes this proliferation of viruses through email. If everybody looked at email as plain text, the whole thing would stop tomorrow.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck. All right, our next caller is Dar from Toronto. Welcome, Dar. What's your question?
Boy, oh boy, you almost got me with my pants down, boys.
Uh-oh.
Well, I thought...
Wasn't Dar the Beastmaster?
Yes.
Played by Mark Singer.
What it was, thought it was Brian Krebs. It isn't. It's in updatexp.com. Universal plugin and free.
Uh-huh.
No, it's not. Damn. What it was, well, as you know, that's a big security hole.
Yeah.
But one of the tech males observed that in most routers, that option is enabled.
If you have to use updatexp.com?
No. In most, delete that part. In most routers, Universal Plug and Pray is enabled by default.
Yes.
UPnP,
Yeah.
Well, now it looks like our holiday with security from routers is gone bye-bye. They're attacking that part in routers now.
Yeah, they are. We're seeing that a lot, particularly if your router is an appliance that you plug in. You need to go in and turn off UPnP. Assuming you can. Some of the routers don't have it in them because you can't connect anything to them except Ethernet cables. But some, particularly if your router is actually an operating system underneath, like Windows or Linux or whatever, and they haven't done their homework in pulling that stuff out, you can have those problems. And that's something people need to be aware of. You're right,
and
Dar.
It's another good technology that was hacked by the bad guys. Yep. It makes it easier to share printers and hard drives on your network.
Yep.
But it also makes it easier for anyone else to share things on your network that you don't want them to.
Right. So if you've got a router that lets you plug in, a lot of routers have extra ports, USB ports and things to plug in, like a hard drive or whatever. And you likely have UPnP, Universal Plug and Play, active in that machine. If you don't have those capabilities, it is probable that you don't have it, but not necessarily likely. You're absolutely right, Darren. I appreciate you bringing that up.
But is there anything else that we should know about routers?
Well, routers, it depends, again, entirely on the router you're using. One of the big problems with routers, and I'll say this quickly, one of the big problems with routers is that when people buy them, they come with a default username and password, Most people never change those.
And if you've got wireless and you're setting that up, make sure you put the encryption in it and put a password in it.
Yeah, right. How many times can I go to just a public street corner, log into the Linksys router with the password admin?
Right.
Yep. Default username and now I have control of their whole network.
That's exactly right. So you got to remember when you install one of those things to change all the defaults. Otherwise, you're just leaving yourself open. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. We're taking your phone calls. Don't forget to come in on the forum. All the normal folks are in there doing whatever they do. Maybe normal wasn't the right word. So join us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, those of you who are Time Warner Cable subscribers for internet access, you should know that Time Warner Cable is preparing to roll out usage-based broadband service tiers to new customers in Beaumont, Texas, with monthly bandwidth caps set at 5 gigabytes, 10 gigabytes, 20 gigabytes, and 40 gigabytes. Customers who exceed their cap would be hit with an undetermined per gigabyte charge, but Bell Canada's overage fees, which range from $1 Canadian to $7.5 Canadian per gigabyte, may give some inkling of where Time Warner's overage fees will end up. Usage caps are a short-sighted response to capacity constraints, one that's likely to hurt the company more than it will help in the long run, especially with new broadband options on the horizon. Time Warner's plans have received a mixed reception, to say the least. Public interest groups such as Public Knowledge have praised the move, with Pre-K President Gigi Sohn calling it a welcome development for consumers and for the cable industry. At the other end of the spectrum are high bandwidth users and companies who are concerned that low caps will slow down the pace of innovation on the internet. The idea behind usage-based billing is to charge customers who use the most bandwidth accordingly. And telling customers that they have X gigabytes of data to burn through each month is better than the kinds of nebulous caps some cable providers have bumped into. Still, I'd argue that Time Warner and any other cable company considering bandwidth caps is taking a short-sighted view of the problem. Time Warner, of course, isn't the only U.S. cable company to contemplate usage caps. Charter has plans to go to a usage-based solution. Comcast's director of communications said that Comcast continually evaluates a number of pricing models, including consumption-based billing. Unsurprisingly, Verizon, whose PR people never hesitate to talk smack about the cable industry, have no plans to trial bandwidth caps with either its plain DSL or Fios service. I want Fios. Okay. I think Time Warner's response is, short-sighted, but that's, I guess, their decision. The problem is really not that there isn't enough bandwidth. The problem is that there's a problem with the capacity that they've currently got on their networks, and it would cost a lot of money to up that.
Their point on it is that there are few people downloading huge amounts of files that slow down everybody else who's just browsing the web.
Yeah,
so they sort of have a point.
Maybe sort of, but the problem now is every time I go to a web page, I'm going to get really porky about the fact that it's got 15 MySpace.
Yep.
Nobody's going to MySpace anymore.
But what really slows down the backbone is all the spam.
Yes. Yes.
Find some way to stop that.
And now, all the email with pictures and songs and. Yep. All the other nonsense.
Now, Roadrunner Residential has done something in Rochester that I'm not particularly fond of.
Yeah.
Did I say that nice enough?
You did.
Yeah, you did.
Normally, for those of us lazy typists, you know, if I want to go to a website, I'll type in IMDb. And my browser fills in the W's and the com for me.
Right.
So I can not type those six characters.
Sure, that's important.
So now, Roadrunner intercepts that typing, sends it to a search engine, and returns a search response as if you had gone to a search engine and typed that as a search key. I don't want it to do that. I want it to go to the website.
Right. Well, you know how to fix that. Your host file.
But
in your host file,
every single website that I...
It's a one-time thing.
Right. So for people that do misspell things now, instead of going to a bad site, it may send you to a search engine. So I can see their point, and for novice users, you know, trying to search. And that brings up one of the statistics Google put out for last year. The highest search terms in Google was Yahoo.com. People go to Google, type in Yahoo.com, Google searches for it, and then you click on the Yahoo.com link. And I see wife do it all the time, because she clicks in the search window, not the address
window.
Right,
yeah. Right, right, right. All right. We're going to, Jessica, we're going to skip to line two because Keith apparently wants to comment on Uncle Dave's story hour this week. So we're going to go to line two. Keith, are you there?
Yeah.
What's your, where are you calling from, Keith?
I'm in my den right now.
No, no, I meant.
You like that one, huh?
I did. Cut him off now. No, where are you calling from geographically, Keith?
Ask him where I'm from.
Where are you from?
Originally my mother.
No! Right. He's my kind of guy.
One last chance, Keith.
All right. I'm in Farmington.
Thank you.
Hey, I got a. Oh, wasn't that funny?
That's funny enough.
Interesting thing.
Don't forget, I'm sitting next to Dave. Go ahead.
Right. My wife is a relative. She hates computers with a passion. And she was forced to get an email address, and I'm trying to show her mine via Hotmail. You know, you type in, this is what you do, you put right. in your password, blah, blah, blah. So, of course, I click on the inbox, and there's five or six from these women who are allegedly women who have seen me, my picture posted.
Oh, right.
On the internet. Well, she goes freaking ballistic. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Who are
you? Right.
I'm laughing my ass off. I'm trying to explain to her that it's just spam, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And she didn't believe me. I'm going,
Is she listening?
They try to make my breast larger and my penis stiffer, but they don't even know what sex I am.
Yeah, I get both of those at the same time, and I'm always thinking that's kind of a narrow demographic, and they missed.
But she
anyway, what did you have to say about Uncle Dave's story hour?
Say what?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, so... The thing with the pornography and the kids,
yeah.
I knew a guy who asked me that he was computer illiterate. He wanted to know how he would get this. Somebody mistyped something.
Yes.
And went to an adult site and it became his homepage. And every yep. time he turned his computer on, he got this and he didn't know what to do. And I told him what to do. This was a couple of years ago. I'm sure he's still as ignorant now as he was before. But people don't understand that. It's just like, with the internet, it's just like keeping your front door open. People can come yep. and go when they want.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very true. It's very true. Thank you, Keith. I appreciate it. And that's, man, is that true?
Yeah, I mean, folks don't realize it. I mean, it's out there. And I had a client one time, he was sitting there trying to show his granddaughter a news article, because he was from a foreign country, but they had the family members yep. that were still over there won an award. So he went to click on it and show it to her, and the site had been hijacked, and all these porn mm-hmm. sites popped up. He tried to close one, 25 more opened up. He literally had to turn his granddaughter away and pull the plug on the computer.
Yeah, that's become known as a pornado.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It happened to my daughter. She was like 6-7 years old, and she typed something wrong. I was sitting right with her, but I had turned my head for a moment, you know. Dad, I didn't do this on purpose. I looked over, all righty. There we are. And I knew it was an accident, and I saw what she had done, typed something wrong.
Well, I can remember when we first got the internet service, got rid of dial-up, and got we had DSL at the time, down at the shop, and Judine was so excited to try it out. She wanted to get her son's, or her husband these new sneakers. So she types in Dick's Sporting Goods. You know,
for the Sporting Goods good. Place, yeah. Well,
she didn't get that.
Yeah, she didn't. I'm sure she didn't.
A loud scream came from the front of the shop. Dan and I had to go running up there. What's the matter? Look! Get rid of it!
Did you explain to her all your computers do that on purpose?
And of course, if you're into calligraphy, you can check out penisland.com.
No. It is not a calligraphy site. It is where you buy styli for your PDAs.
You understand.
I do understand. All right, we're going on to the phone now because we've gone way around the bend. Our next caller is Judy from Wayland. Welcome, Judy. Thanks for holding on through all of that.
Thanks for getting me on.
Yeah.
Well, I got one comment for Dave. My granddaughter got on my computer and I didn't pay attention to what she was doing until I went and got back on there. She was getting porno.
Yep. Yep.
So I had to put a password on it and get to the point where it was driving me crazy because every time I wanted to go someplace, I had to put in my password.
Yep.
And she may not have done it on purpose.
Oh, she did it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Sometimes. Yeah, but you can misspell something and get to a porn site.
Well, she was doing it at home, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Do they think nobody can girls into follow them? All right, anyway, what's your question?
The viewing side.
Okay, I bought a new computer back in November, and it had Windows Vista. Well, it seems like I've had nothing but trouble with it.
Mm-hmm.
It runs really slow. I've got my old hard drive from my other computer. I just wondered, could I switch hard drives?
And do what?
Into the new computer.
And run Windows XP?
Yeah.
No, necessarily.
You'd have to install XP over that XP. In other words, even though you're taking your old hard drive, putting it into this new machine.
Right.
That you could do, but then there'd be other problems.
Yeah, you've got to install XP over XP again to re-register it with that hardware. Because XP and Vista and them look at the hardware in the machine, and that's part of the setup.
And then you may have driver problems for the video card in the new computer, the Ethernet card in the new computer. You'd have to go find all those drivers.
You say your Vista is running slow. How much memory is in this new machine?
I don't know.
You'd want at least a gig. Two gig is even better.
Yeah.
No, I think it's at least 2 gig. I haven't really used it that much.
Mm-hmm.
And like the other night I turned it on, mm-hmm. and before anything could even come up, it froze on me. So I had to turn around and shut it back down and start all over again.
Yeah, but see,
you may have something more wrong with it then.
You might want to take it in and have it looked at.
Because I'm sure it's still under warranty if you only bought it in November.
Oh, yeah.
So I would definitely.
Software is often not covered under warranty.
But have them check. You might be getting confused how much space and versus memory. Hard disk space and memory are two different things.
Right.
I mean, you could have a big hard drive in there. You could have a 160 gig hard drive, but you might only have, say, 512 of memory. So have them check it out. You want a minimum of at least a gig of memory. 2 gig is even better.
I don't remember what it had.
Yeah, like I say, take it in and have them just check it out. Just let them know that, you know, it's running slow. And, of course, you know, you might just have to do some of the Tango stuff.
But that is a general issue with Vista, is it requires much bigger hardware levels. Much more RAM, and it doesn't work with a lot of your old peripherals and software. So it's been a huge problem in the industry, and Microsoft isn't doing very well in selling Vista.
Well, that's not,
and one of the big things Dave alluded to is the video card.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to turn on all that eye candy, you're going to need a massively fast video card.
And a lot of the cheap computers come with shared video,
right?
Which is even slower.
Onboard video.
Right, and the whole idea is that takes away from your real memory.
Yep.
So if you got a gig of RAM and you gave a quarter of a gig to the video, you don't have enough RAM to run Vista well. All right, we are going to take another break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright and his alter ego Uncle Dave, who seems to be popping up all over the place today. Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who ably is once again recording the show to update the archives. God bless him. He comes in here every week and volunteers his time. Not that bright, not catching on fast that we're not paying him, but he comes in and does it every week anyway.
We still love him.
We still love him. Jessica Sawyer, who is ably sitting in for Rob Linton, who's
a lot cuter.
Way cuter, but then you are very cute, but that's damning with faint praise because the other choice is Rob. So I don't know what else to tell you. I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening. He's going to come in and... sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 40 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Those of you who are fans of Netflix but are feeling left out because you own a Macintosh, one of the biggest shortcomings of Netflix web movie streaming service is that it doesn't yet work on Macs. Why not? Because the Microsoft-based DRM... the company uses only works on Windows. Expect the solution this year. During the company's Q4 earnings call earlier this week, Netflix said it hopes to support web-based streams for Mac owners in 2008. Well, I know you're very excited about that. I use Linux. I'll never be able to watch a Netflix movie.
You have a Mac.
I do have a Mac. Actually, I have two. Netflix must be getting a good... Well, I have two. But all right, my department has two. Netflix, I don't want anybody to get the idea that I own more than one computer. I have access to computers because I am the systems administrator and in the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology, but I don't actually myself own many computers. Netflix must be getting a good deal on their streaming bandwidth. says they're not worried about the cost of streaming unlimited movies to customers.
What, $8 a month now? Their new plan?
Yeah. I suspect that they figure most customers won't actually be streaming movies because watching a movie on your laptop or your PC is really a distinctly second-rate
experience.
There's
a few people that are going to test that unlimited streaming.
There are a few, but it is a second-rate experience. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got the choice of watching it on your laptop or on a big screen TV, pick the big screen TV every time.
And that's one of the markets that Apple is finally getting into correctly with their Apple TV box. It used to be the Apple TV box was just sort of an adjunct to your computer, and you had to buy your actual video on the computer. Right. Now the Apple TV box hooks to your television. It can be used independently. You can browse, download, rent, and buy video right on your big screen TV.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Henry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is about the gentleman earlier that had a problem with the Windows update.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Over the holiday, I went down to visit my sister in Florida. They're computer novices, so whenever I'm there, I do maintenance on their computer. I was going to run the Tango, found out that their computer had not updated Windows since May. I could not manually update it either. I kept getting an error, and I don't believe it was quite the same error that this gentleman was getting, but whenever I looked it up, it did say about missing or corrupted files, even though I could find the files that were in the logs on their computer. So I did a whole bunch of stuff trying to get this figured out, couldn't do anything. Finally, just got frustrated, said, heck with it, I'm going to forget Windows Update, go through, run the Tango. Did it, complete thing, start to finish, run the antivirus, didn't find anything. Adware, SpyBot, Super Antiware, Spyware, found a whole bunch of hundreds of stuff, cleaned that stuff up, rebooted in this normal mode. Time it took me to reset my restore point, Windows updated up, downloaded a whole bunch of updates.
So after you did the Tango, it all worked?
Yes, and it has run perfectly since.
Yep. It's clearly there was some virus had attacked something and made it an unrecognizable file in terms of update. And so update said there's something not right here. I got to quit.
So it may help you. It may not. I don't know.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Henry. You.
Okay.
Yep. It's my favorite part of the show, of course, when callers call in.
And they can help us
to help each other. Right. Our next caller is Patrick from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Patrick. What's your question?
Hey, I finally, after years of frustration and disappointment, got a Mac. On your recommendation, I don't know how many times you've said it on the air.
Well, Steve has said it. I say get a Linux box, but that's okay.
Okay. But I'm using the Mac Mini with the Airport, not the Airport Extreme. It's called Airport Express.
That's the smaller router,
It's the smaller broadcast point, right. And I was looking around in security features, and I didn't see any. I'm not sure if this equipment already has a firewall. Do I need to secure the system in some way with some other software so that my whole neighborhood isn't logging on to this Airport Express?
Well, that's two different questions. The computer does have a firewall built in. It's in system preferences under security.
Very good.
But you want to turn on a wireless password in your wireless network so that other people can't log into your wireless network because the radio waves extend beyond your house.
Right.
And you do that in the airport administration utility that's in your utilities folder.
Now, will I be forced to log on with a password every time then when I use that feature?
Yes, but you can tell your computer to remember the password so then you don't have to type it in every time.
Okay.
Which can be a security-ish flaw because then if someone has physical access to your computer, your password is saved in there.
Right,
so it's that trade-off between convenience and security.
I understand. Yeah, mostly I'm secured about people outside the home.
Right.
Right.
And you also might want to take a look at the Apple Users Group, Apple Cider, as a new Apple owner, applecider.org. They meet the second Wednesday of the month at East High School. And it's just a great way to meet other Mac users and get help on your Mac.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'll look under, what is it, airport security features?
The airport administration utility in your utilities folder.
I'll look for that. Thank you.
I'm quite surprised that there's no firewall in the actual airport.
Well, there's a NAT router built in. which is a firewall ish, yeah, like most of the other routers. And like most routers these days, if you run the setup assistant, it asks you to change your default password and change the default name and put on a wireless password. But most people just plug it in and it works. So if you run the setup assistant, it will want you to change the password. Same thing on all the Windows wireless routers.
Right.
In fact, we've been noticing on the Linksys routers, it comes with a sticker over the ports, run CD first, and the CD walks you through putting the passwords on it and
right.
changing. But yeah, people just plug it in and it works.
Yep.
So you have to stop doing that.
Yep. All right. Our next caller is Ron, who's apparently wandering around on 490.
Ron, are you there? Yes, I am.
Do you have your radio on?
No, I don't.
Okay, go ahead.
It must just be feedback from the cell phone.
Yep.
Listening to Uncle Dave's rant, a few weeks ago, I went online looking for a kid's browser to alleviate those issues. And this is for younger kids, mind you. I found a browser, KidZooey, and it was developed by parents and teachers, and it severely limits the sites that they can go to. It's, like I say, it's designated towards young kids. A lot of the stuff that they like to go to, you know, Webkinz. And
yeah,
stuff
we
like
had
that.
Somebody on from a child's friend. Remember we had a guest on last year that is another one of those that is parents were very curious, you know, and wanted to protect their kids. And it's all run by some adults and will only let kids in.
Yeah, it's completely child-oriented.
Yep,
and
yep.
They actually send weekly reports on your child's activity so you
cool.
can see where they're going and what they're looking at.
How do you spell that?
KIDZUI.
ZUI. All right, thanks.
I found another one, KIDZOOIE.
Yeah, I found that one too. KidZooey, cool. All right, thanks. We're going to take, Steve will put those both. Well, first we'll look and see what they're like, and then we'll put them up on the links site. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. We've got a few more people on the line. I think we can get through them all, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes. I already did that part, so I'll just now say you're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe at 49 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. All right, let's go right back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Clarence, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Hi, I'll try to make this short as I can. I've got four Dell C400 laptops, two with internal wireless cards, and two with external wireless cards that I was running this program. It's a desktop network-based desktop expansion program called MaxiVista, and it was too slow with the wireless network. So I didn't have enough ports on my Linksys wireless router, so I bought a network switch and got them all hooked up wired. That went no problem. That was back in November. The problem comes when I try to go back to getting the two with the internal card to hook back up wirelessly. They'll see the network. They connect to the router. They see the network. They will not see the internet. The two with the generic, cheapo external cards hook back up and go back online without a hitch. I've been reading and trying different things for hours.
All right, so you've got a wireless router,
right,
connected to your DSL or cable modem.
DSL.
And also connected to that same wireless router is another switch.
A Linksys switch, right.
All right, if you plug everybody into the wireless router, does it work?
Ignoring the switch.
Ignoring the switch. I don't have enough connections on the back of the router.
Well, if you just plug one in, even just one,
does it
work?
Yeah. My Toshiba laptop, my wife's desktop, and my daughter's desktop all connect to the internet, no problem.
All right. So here's what I'm thinking. When you connect a device to the internet, it requires an internet address. When you connect something on your side of a router, you create your own little network. If you have two devices that are each trying to create their own little network, you get two different little networks.
Yeah, you're sure this is a switch only and not a routing switch or a router?
It was a Linksys network switch.
Yeah, the names are slippery nowadays. I don't trust them. Hubs and switches and routers seem to have become interchangeable.
Yeah, but
so
he's
what might well
plugged in, but he's not wireless.
Right.
Yeah,
so
I can get them all to work wired. That's not a problem.
Okay. So your switch isn't the issue. Right, what I think it might be is in the laptop. Double check your wireless connection to make sure you're still doing DHCP.
Right.
And not that you haven't assigned it in a specific address.
It may be that the laptops are not automatically switching from wired internet to wireless internet, and you have to manually tell it use this connection now instead of the other connection it was using.
Should
I do go under network connections and disable the wired card and enable wireless card, and like the two with the there's four laptops that are like more or less identical.
Mm-hmm.
Two with the external card connect, no problem. If the two with the internal cards, I don't know. I've been trying to compare settings and
are the two with the internal cards still plugged in wired as well?
No, I can get them to reconnect when I plug them back in wireless, wired.
Right.
But when I try to disable the wired card, enable the wireless internal card, it connects to the network. It'll see all my other computers, but it will not see the internet.
Tell you what. We have on our website I'm assuming these are Windows XP machines?
Yep.
All right, we have a utility up there, and I think it's WinIP Fix.
Okay.
Try downloading that utility to both of those laptops that you're having issues with. And what it does is reset the socket programs. There might be a setting in there that Windows is locked up on that it's having issues. And all it does is erase it. The minute you rerun it, try to make your connections, it rewrites that file.
Okay.
So run both of those, both that utility and both those machines and see if that helps solve your problem.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks. You're welcome.
The problem is that that's a fairly complex setup, and without seeing...
Yeah. I've also seen cases where the router runs out of IPs. You're supposed to get 255 IPs, but every time the computer logs back in, it's supposed to get the same IP address. If it gets another one, then another one, then another one, I've seen them run out of addresses.
Right, yeah. Right.
So try resetting your router, turn it off, wait a minute, turn it back on, so that it starts over. Actually, turn everything off so that the IP range restarts over again.
Yep.
Because now you're giving that computer two IP addresses, one for the wired, one for the wireless.
Right. I had a similar problem when I first plugged in a second router.
And the Linksys routers start at 100.
Right.
So the first 100 addresses are ignored, so you only get 100 addresses.
Right.
Which is usually enough.
Except. Ought to be for a home machine, for a home setup. 100 addresses ought to serve you. All right, it seems that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to all of those to whom we did not get next week. Call earlier and often, the Chicago style of calling in. Call early and often. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, as always, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer for ably taking care of us these last 2 weeks. Both fortunately and unfortunately, we'll have Rob Linton back with us next week, I think. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks so much for listening. You have been listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. And as you should know by now, that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.